Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight's show is training in inclement weather. Anna Scott said, what a beautiful day. We should go to the range and do some shooting. And you should. But since the chances you'll experience some form of inclement weather during rough situations, you should also try to make sure you know how you and your gear and additional gear function in snow, rain, ice, heat, etc. What you do, what your gear does when it's wet, when it's iced over, or when it's too hot to touch. Training during cold, wet, hot weather is never really fun, but the things you learn about yourself and your gear are invaluable to your ability to function competently during inclement weather. If you have any comments, feel free to call in at 347-308-8790, and I'll pick you up and put you on the air. We'll see what's going on with you. Well, I never used to worry too much about inclement weather till I got sent up to Alaska. And I took my favorite rifle out. Gonna have a little fun with it. Figured I'd shoot some ptarmigan. An old 03A3. All situated. Lined up with a nice light cast bullet load. Got one of them little white fool hands hopping around out there. And I couldn't see them, because that aperture sight got jammed full of crud, a little icy, wet, didn't want to work. I was able to grab a hold of my finger and thumb and thaw it out and blow the crud out of it and get my ptarmigan that day, but I wasn't ready or expecting it. Nowadays, I have a little cover that I put over the back end of that rifle or my M1 when I'm out in freezing rain, and it keeps those kind of things from happening. But if you're not ready for those unexpected deals, you could spend a little cold, hungry time out there wanting that meal and not getting it. If you take your gear out and you train with it in bum weather, if you work at it, find out all the little quirks, you'll come up with all the little fixes. There's that Scout popping in there now. How you doing, Scout?
Hey, I'm doing okay.
All right.
I'm running a little bit late on work again. I may have to alter the show time if this is going to keep happening. So I apologize for that.
That's okay. We got going without you here. I just relaying a little inclement weather experience I had with my 03A3 in a froze up aperture sight. But now
okay.
That you're here, pop on in and continue with show.
All right. Did the show music not play?
It did.
Okay, because I see it on here. It shows it's still playing.
I had Creedence on there, and I thought I turned them off.
No, it's got the show automatically, the show music automatically starts without you doing anything. It automatically starts. and runs. So maybe it's, I mean, I don't hear anything, so maybe it's not audible.
Okay.
All right, well, the show tonight is going to be covering how weather is going to affect your training and your practice. And first of all, I don't want the show title to I don't want it to be confusing, because there's I don't really mean training during bad weather, at least not training with your firearms. What I'm talking about is practicing. Because practice and training are really two different things. Training is when you're doing something new. You're learning a new skill or a new technique. And practicing is where you're rehearsing, or actually doing the skills that you've learned. You're doing something you've done before in order to become more proficient at it. You don't really want to train on new skills in bad weather, or really in any environment that that is going to that's going to prevent you from being focused during the training, right? You don't want to try and learn new stuff out on the range during a cold, rainy day, because you're going to be thinking more about how cold you are and about the rain and stuff like that than you will be about what you're trying to learn. You actually want to you actually want to learn new stuff on your own nice, beautiful, sunshiny days where there's no distractions, it's not cold, you don't have to wear a bunch of extra clothing, all of that, because you want to be able to be completely focused on the task at hand. And then once you have learned your skills and stuff like that, then you can actually practice those skills in inclement weather. So I want to make sure that I clear that up. That we don't want to be learning new stuff during bad weather. We want to learn new stuff in the best of the training environment possible. And then you want to rehearse those skills under less than optimum conditions in order for you to understand the things that can happen or the different requirements for inclement weather whenever you're whenever you experience that. All right, so there is going out to the range on a beautiful sunshiny day is perfect, and everybody loves that. Everybody loves shooting. Today here was a great day for something like that. The weather conditions were great. It was sunshiny. The temperature was great. It was a great day for going to the range and shooting. There are a lot of things that can get between you and what you want to do, especially if there's bad weather. And you don't want to suddenly find these things out in a situation that requires you to use your firearm in hunting or self-defense or something like that. You want to try and experience these things beforehand. Sam and I both work with Appleseed, and Appleseed's policy was that we have the events, rain, shine, snow, sleet. We've had them in hurricanes and tornadoes. The only thing we don't do is lightning, and I certainly wouldn't advise anybody to be practicing or rehearsing during lightning. I don't know what you'd be able to find out new about that, other than you can get killed, right? And I'll just tell you right now, so you'll know, you can get killed doing that. So don't jack around with rehearsing and stuff during lightning storms. But we found out during those many years of working the line during rain and cold and everything else at the Appleseeds, a lot of good stuff, because not only does inclement weather affect your firearms with them getting cold or wet or dirty or whatever else, but it certainly affects you too, how you function, how you are going to react during shooting situations. Now, Sam, you said a minute ago you were talking about something that you had learned. What was that? Since I just walked in, I missed that. You had learned from shooting your rifle in the cold. You there? Well, I'll tell you one of the first things that that I learned was that this was quite a few years ago up in Vermont during a shoot, and we were shooting, I believe, 500 or 600 meters on the military range there, and it started, and I was instructing at the course. We had a chance to shoot ourselves, and it started pouring down rain. And I wanted to get in on the last round of shooting from distance. And it dashed over, grabbed my Garand out of the truck, unzipped it, dashed up to the line, got into position, put the end block in, and bang. And when I fired, I got a tremendous amount of blowback, and it was water and grease both vaporized together. So, if you get a little water in your eyes, no sweat, you just wipe it out. But whenever you get a whole bunch of grease in your eye, that's it. I wasn't blinded, but I certainly couldn't see well enough to make an accurate shot at 500 meters, not with my eyes full of grease. And that's how I carry my Garand, because, Garands, they want to be packed solid with grease. That's how they want to operate. That's how usually you want to keep them, is, packed nice and thick with a bunch of the gun grease. It's just like axle grease, but the action will fill up with water. And then when you fire, the mixture of the bolt coming to the rear, full of water and grease, will swing that in your face. So now I know. Now I know that. I know that if I'm going to take my Garand out and it's going to start raining, and I want to make sure that I'm able to make shots accurately, I know I've got to try and hurry up and clean as much of the grease out of it, much of the excess grease as I can, much of the grease that I can get out of it. So I see you're back now, Sam. What was it that you were talking about with your rifle?
I had frozen up a receiver sight, went out in freezing rain, and went to take a shot at a ptarmigan, and had big ice ball in peep on my 03A3. I was lucky I could just grab it with my thumb and finger and thaw it out and blow the water out of it pretty quick. But now when I go out in freezing rain like that, I've got a little cover to lay over it, like folks used to put over their flintlocks. Just a little leather cover to put over it and keep the rain off, and then I don't have to worry about having ice balls or rain in that peep sight.
Well, let's talk about the cold for a minute, because there are quite a few issues with the cold. Number one, you as an individual if you're going to be out in the cold weather, then you're going to gear up for it. You're going to wear a bunch of extra clothing, several layers of clothing, a jacket. You're probably going to wear a hat and gloves, stuff like that. And that makes a big difference in the way that you handle and manipulate your firearm. If you are, if it's cold weather out and you're going to be wearing, depending on how cold it is, you may be wearing mittens. You may be wearing, mittens over your gloves. Or you may be wearing like a double set of gloves with the, like the military has. And the civilian models have the same thing where you're wearing like a wool sleeve with a leather or a polypropylene or nylon outer over it. Something like that. That's going to affect your ability to find and draw your firearm. If you are trying to use your firearm in a self-defense situation, like if you're trying to use your handgun, it's going to be several things that are going to come into play. One, if you're wearing gloves, it's going to affect your ability to feel and handle the firearm. You're not going to have as clean or clear a tactile sense of where your fingers are touching the firearm because you're going to have gloves on. The gloves are going to make your hands bigger. I mean, it's going to be... you're going to have a different grip because your hands are going to be bigger. You're going to have more difficulty maybe in sliding that trigger finger into the trigger guard and getting it on. If you have a handgun that has manual safety, you're going to need to practice and rehearse drawing and manipulating that safety with the gloves on. You're going to need to practice and rehearse finding the magazine release and doing magazine changes with those gloves on. Now, you can also shed the gloves, too. I mean, you can sling those off, but then that means that there's going to be some kind of a time factor involved. Maybe only one or two seconds, but 1 or 2 seconds in a gunfight can be a lifetime. So... you need to figure out what you're going to do. If you're going to find and draw with your gloves on, if you're going to sling them off, and the situation, I'm sure, will a lot of times the situation will help determine what your decision is going to be, whether you have time or not. Also. Wearing a thick jacket is going to affect, or any kind of cover clothing is going to affect how you uncover. Now, how you're going to uncover to access the firearm, how you're going to sling it out of the way so that you can make a clean draw. We've talked about this before during some of our classes, and one of the things that helps people in some cases was to carry their extra magazine in the lower pocket of the lower jacket pocket on the side where their firearm was. They carry their extra magazine in there. That way, when you try and push the jacket to the side, to clear it for your draw, it has weight in it, and it'll stay away long enough for you to make your draw. So when you're clearing the jacket out of the way to make your draw, that extra magazine will weight that front pocket of the jacket and give you the ability to sling the jacket out of the way to make your draw. If you're wearing a sweater, then you're going to have to grasp the sweater and pull it up in order to clear it for your draw. And probably you're going to be doing this wearing gloves. So you need to become familiar with the way that you're going to do that, how it feels, how you're going to make sure that you can clear your clothing away to make your draw. Sometimes people use different or wear different holsters during cold weather. I know that a lot of times I will wear a shoulder harness, a shoulder holster during cold weather, because if I'm working outside, I may be wearing a insulated coveralls and stuff like that, and it would really be difficult to make a draw from a belt holster. So I'll wear a shoulder holster that allows me to unzip the insulated coveralls and make a draw from my upper body. Now, a lot of people do the same thing if they're driving. They want to make sure that they're not having to dig down below, or that they're sitting on the handgun or something like that. But this is something else that you'll need to think about whenever you're practicing and rehearsing your inclement weather skills. So the clothing that you're wearing is going to produce a fairly large effect on the way that you are going to handle your firearm. The same is true for your rifle. If you are wearing several layers of clothing, or a thick jacket or something like that, then you're effectively adding distance or adding length to your rifle stock. That means if you're wearing a thick jacket and it's really cold and you've got a thick jacket on or a sweater on or something like that, you may be adding up to an inch and a half to your butt stock. That's going to change your eye to optics or eye to sight distance, and it's probably going to change your cheek weld as well. You'll have to manipulate your body in order to get the same cheek weld, because you're going to have the added distance from your what would have been your skin with a shirt over it to your skin with an inch or an inch plus of clothing. It makes your rifle longer and increases the distance, your eye relief. This is going to be something that that you need to think about and that you need to practice. Now,
that's one of the beauties of an M4, Scout. You can collapse it down a notch and make up for that heavy clothing or body armor.
right. Yeah, you
can. That's the only thing I like about it.
Yeah, you can adjust. You can adjust the stock on some firearms. I know that people that even have they'll have their summer and winter stocks for their rifles, because they've got a nice summer stock that they're using, and they know that in the winter they're going to have possibly more bad weather and heavy clothing. They'll have a different stock that they'll bolt onto the rifle, and that's going to affect your zero. So you'll need to make sure that you are practicing and rehearsing, making your shots with this thicker clothing on. Another consideration of thicker clothing, and I've read this. I was reading a story recently by Masad Ayoub about this, and I certainly read several stories from from police, the details of police shootings and stuff about this, is that, and what Masoud Ayoub was talking about, is that he normally, for his home defense shotgun loads, he normally uses a number one buckshot. But because the individual you may be trying to defend yourself against may be wearing multiple layers of clothing, including thick jackets, thick cotton duck like Carhartt, thick jackets and stuff like that, that he was worried he may not get the penetration from the number one buckshot. So once the weather cools up and he switches from his, I believe the number one had 36 pellets, and the double lot, I think, had 8 pellets and of a greater diameter, which means a greater ability to penetrate. And you may want to consider that when you're thinking about handgun calibers and stuff like that in winter. Also, there are a lot of new, really nice microguns that are being sold and used right now. And I find it really hard at times to use those pistols when I'm barehanded. My hand is big enough that it swallows some of the small ones. If I were carrying that small handgun and I had gloves on, I'd really be in trouble. So this is something that that you want to think about whenever you're practicing, rehearsing your inclement weather, cold, hot, rainy, that you're taking into consideration how your clothing is going to change, the way that you're going to be able to hold a firearm. The gas-filled optics on a lot of the rifles now, gas is going to be affected by changes in temperature. It's an inert gas, but it's still going to be affected by changes in temperature. And really cold temperature or really hot temperature may very well affect how the light, how you're seeing where that red dot is in your optics, or how you're seeing the crosshairs. So just remember that there could be a slight difference in zero due to the gas density that's going to be changing in the weather. Let me say also too that if you're out in the cold and there's a lot of snow and stuff like that, I would seriously consider making sure that I had some type of device to protect my muzzle, the end of my muzzle. The reason for this is because if you stumble, and the same thing goes for rain on rainy days and stuff, if you stumble and you jam that firearm into the snow or into the mud, then you take a chance on packing that the muzzle with snow or ice. or if it's sleeting, if it's if there's precipitation coming, then that precipitation could flow into the end of the barrel, and it could fill it. And with the cold temperature, it could ice up and become solid. So we want to make sure that that you have some type of protection from the from foreign objects getting into your barrel, because even though it's snow and it seems soft, if you jam a bunch of snow into the barrel and wait just a little while, and it gets and it hardens into ice, into a solid ice plug, then there's a good chance that that could that firing an additional round of that could cause some damage to your firearm, some injuries to you. And the same thing goes for rainy weather, because in rainy weather, you get the ground gets wet, it's muddy, slippery. There's a lot more chances, and we saw this during the last running gun, the last running gun event we had here. I actually saw people doing it, and that is with the ground. When the ground is dry, and you put your barrel onto the ground, or it touches the ground or something like that, it's there's a lot less danger than whenever it's muddy. When it's muddy and you're slipping and slopping and you stumble and that barrel goes to the ground, that's the softened, muddy ground is a lot more likely to jam itself into the muzzle. So I would recommend some type of a muzzle cover, and something that you can shoot through. You know, the military, they have the plastic end caps that you could slide over the flash suppressor on the ARs and on the M16s, and it would cover it, and you could shoot through it. And that was that's like the best deal. I know people. I've read about the guys in World War II and since then, using things like condoms and stuff like that, or balloons, or all different types of things. But you need to think of something, figure out some way that you can safely. And a lot of times, I'll just take a piece of tape and just tape the opening to the muzzle with a piece of tape, you know, and just cut it to fit it so that it's just covering the end of the muzzle, and it doesn't allow stuff to get into the barrel, but I can still shoot through it if it's on the on some type of a rifle that has a solid barrel. And I bought a whole bunch of the old Army M16 caps off eBay a while back, and I use those on my AR, but that's certainly another consideration.
You know, Scout, there's a product out there that works wonderfully for that job. A lot of folks forget about, and they've got them in the bathroom a lot of times. They make a gadget called a finger cot. And use
yeah,
it when
yeah.
you can't put a bandage on the end of your finger, or sometimes folks use them to get a better grip. And they're really
right.
cheap. And it's just like a midget condom. And they'll fit right over the end of that barrel, and you can shoot through it with no problem. Just enough to keep dirt and crud out of it. And kind of handy. You can get you some of them and you know, throw one in your cleaning kit that you take out in the field or whatever, and put it on if you need it.
Right. Right, yeah. You can get those from just about anywhere. I've seen them at the dollar store, just about anywhere. Any of the first aid places, you can get those. And and just pop one over the end of the barrel, and that will help keep it free of any foreign material. And it doesn't have to be, doesn't have to be cold or rainy. You can do that at any time. Keep dirt or other foreign objects from getting in there. Let's talk about the lubrication for your firearms, because you can't take the same lubricant that you would use in the summertime and expect it to work efficiently in the wintertime. They're designed for different temperatures. If you take that that gun grease that I was telling you about earlier with my Garand, if I take that and I grease my Garand down with that, and then I move from my 70-degree temperature down into freezing or below, that gun grease is going to begin to harden, and a lot of the oils are too. So make sure that you're checking the temperature range for your lubrication, and make sure that that lubrication is going to fit within the temperature ranges you're going to be operating in, because if it's not made for operating in cold temperature, it's going to be like a brake on the moving parts of your firearm. It's going to be slowing it down, maybe even preventing it from functioning at all. So make sure that you're checking the lubrication range, and you're using the right lubricants for the temperatures that you're going to be working in. Another thing is, a lot of the modern firearms are now manufactured with plastics and polymers. And the plastics and polymers are affected by extreme cold by virtue of the fact that they become a lot more brittle. And that means that, say, you take that nice, I know the PMAGs are really nice and sturdy mags, and I don't really know what their temperature ratings are, but theoretically, you could take any type of plastic, you get it nice and cold, really cold, like down at freezing and below freezing, and you tap it onto the handle of that AR to make sure that the rounds are all seated properly to the back, and it may very well crack in half, as many of the other plastic parts on your firearm may do. They may become more brittle. They may be easier for them to break or fracture. So you need to keep that in mind. The temperature change is certainly going to cause them to cause them to become more brittle. All right. Okay. What about rain? Rain makes everything wet, and it could be cold rain. It could be warm rain. One of the things that that I do, and you may want to consider, most of the ammunition that is manufactured now is made to be water resistant. You know, it's made so that water cannot get to the interior parts of it. But that's not something that I would bet my life on. So if I have ammunition that has been it's been out in the rain, it's been soaking, it's been underwater, because if I go in the water, my rifle goes in the water with me. So if your ammunition has gotten wet, if it's gotten soaked, there's a good chance it's probably still going to function fine. But that may not be something that you want to bet your life on. So ammunition, especially for my pistol and stuff like that, ammunition that has gotten wet gets moved to my training pile. And I'll usually mark on the package or put it in a Ziploc bag and mark it for the training pile, because I don't want to have a situation where I'm depending on the ammunition working flawlessly and have it have gotten wet and now be the question about whether it's going to work or not. So make sure that you are paying attention to ammunition that that has gotten wet or has been in any water for any amount of time, because there's a chance that it could have gotten damaged in some way. So for practice or rehearsal ammunition, it could be perfectly fine, but I wouldn't want to bet my life on it. With rain, as with snow or any other form of precipitation, one of the first things you want to do when you get back to a dry place is make sure that you disassemble your firearm, and you make sure that you've gotten all of the water, you've removed all the water from it, because you handle your firearms with your bare hands throughout the year, and that can leave salt and other stuff on it, and the rainwater can cause those salts and oil to migrate into places that that you can't wipe off with a cloth, and that can lead to rust. So make sure that when you get back home and you get into a warm place, and you need to wait for just a bit too to do this probably, because what you want is you want the temperature, you want the rifle to the temperature to adjust to where you are, because when if you're out in the extreme cold and you bring it in, it's certainly going to sweat. You want to make sure that you get all the moisture out of the rifle, that you, even if you have to, disassemble it. If you've been out in the rain, that means that rain has been able to get to all of the places in the rifle that you wouldn't normally, get. So make sure that you are, you're disassembling the rifle and then putting a light coat of oil on it like you normally would. The rain, like I said, is going to make everything wet. That means things are going to be slippery. Things that, especially if you do have a coat of oil on your firearm, it means that with a coat of oil and the water, that it's going to be slippery. It's going to be easier easier for you or harder for you to get a good grip on it at times. You'll have water that's running into your eyes and your ears. This is something that that you're going to have to figure out how to deal with. It's going to be an aggravation. It's going to affect the way that you move, the way that you grip things. It's going to affect the your shoes being full of water is going to affect the way you move. So, and I was always amazed that that as many people, when we were doing the apple seeds, as many people were willing to stay out in the rain and to continue shooting during the apple seeds. As many people were willing to do that as they were. There was even one case where we were shooting at a brand new range, and the range owner had built the range a little bit too short. So for us to shoot at 25 meters, we had to back out all the way to the end of the range. And that meant that the people actually had, they were on the incline of the ditch. So from their waist down, they were actually in a ditch. And it filled up with water, and they continued to shoot. They continued to get down in it. They were determined to finish out the day, and they did. But I just thought that was pretty amazing. All right, one other thing about cold. Let me go back to that too, is that the when you're shooting at distance, the air, the temperature changes are going to affect your zero, because your ammunition is going to your zero is going to be different in the colder, denser air than it is warm air. So you're going to need to make sure that you that you're making allowances for it. If you're reloading, you know, the ammo that you load in the summer is not going to produce. It's not going to function. It's not going to perform the same way that the ammunition loaded in winter is going to. All right, the moisture in your powder is going to vary by the season that you load it up in. So make sure that you're taking this into account. When you're shooting in the heat, and this is certainly something we've had a lot of experience with here in Texas, because we would run events during all of the summer months, and had a lot of people shooting in some very hot days, and the temperature was such that with the sunshine and the temperature that they had to fold their shooting mats or their carpets over onto the rifles if they weren't using them, because just in the 5 minutes or 10 minutes at the most that we took to give instruction, the rifles would become too hot to touch. This also will affect your bullet strike. Shooting a rifle that is where the barrel is already really hot is going to affect your zero. You should be familiar with impact that's going to have on your shooting. I guess that's pretty much a literal thing there, that we want to know how it's going to affect the impact of your round down range. You yourself are going to be hot. You're going to sweat more. You're going to need more fluids to replace what you're sweating. sometimes in very severe heat, 100 degrees to 110 degrees, is going to affect your reaction time. It's going to be slowed down. It's going to affect your thinking time. That's going to be slowed down. Think kind of slow down the hotter it gets. So you need to take that into consideration. And I tell people that when we were talking about your dry fire game, I was telling people that they should certainly make sure that that they are, when you're getting up in the morning, you get dressed, that you're doing several draws out of your whatever you're going to wear that day, so that you'll know how it's going to affect you. That's going to be whether you're wearing just a t-shirt or shooting in a in several layers of clothing in a trench coat or whatever you're going to wear. You should be doing your practice draws in order to make sure that you're familiar with how you're going to how you're going to move the clothing, how you're going to clear your firearm. All right. All right, Sam. You have anything that that you wanted to add? I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring on Mark, who's listening, Mark in Wyoming, because I'm sure he has some tips on what some of these guys do in the cold. Mark, you there?
Yes, sir.
Well, I know that I talked to you before about you guys shooting in snow and ice. You have any tips, any info on what you guys do during really cold weather?
Yeah, you gotta make sure you got all the oil off your bolt, out of your trigger mechanism, and otherwise it might not even go off for you.
Right.
And then bring it back in the house. You might want to clean it a couple extra times, just like you said earlier, to make sure you get all the water and condensation out of one.
Right, because when you bring that thing in the house, even if it's a dry day, you bring that ice cold rifle in the house, it's going to start sweating.
Oh yeah, big time.
And if you leave that on, it's going to rust up. So you want to make sure that once the rifle has returned to the temperature inside the house, that you you get all of that condensation off of it. Anything else that you guys find? I know that. I know that whenever you get really cold, the physiology of your body changes. You know, your blood is going to flow differently. Your breathing is going to change. There's a good chance that you could develop, some involuntary shivers and stuff like that. You may lose some fine motor skills. I did this just the other day, working out I think it was like 35 degrees and wet. It only took about 10 minutes for my hands to get numb and stop obeying my commands. And that's even with gloves on, you know. So all of these things are going to affect the way that you shoot. You have anything else that come to mind, Mark?
No, that's about what I had there. I hadn't even really thought about it until you asked. Yeah. But
you guys do experience some really cold weather there, and I know that most people there, they're just, when folks that live in cold weather are more geared up for it, so they have more experience doing it, but it doesn't change physiology, and it doesn't change things like condensation, stuff like that. But all right, well, just yell if you've got anything else, Mark. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Scott. See ya.
Like I said, your body is going to act differently, and you want to make sure that you're experiencing this so that you can understand how it's going to work on you. You got anything, Sam?
Well, you know, you talked about ammunition that you loaded up in warm weather and all, and different moisture contents and stuff. It pays to take your ammunition and figure out where it's actually going to shoot in cold weather, and not so much a matter of the recipe you loaded or how it went, but if you take a sight in with a particular load that you ordinarily use, and not only do you have problems with the air being denser when it's cold, the powder doesn't always ignite quite as nicely and uniformly as it does when it's hot. Up in Alaska, I found regularly that I needed another 3 clicks at 500 yards to be hitting with my M1, simply because I wasn't getting as consistent an ignition. And a load that developed 2,700 feet per second at up in Utah when I loaded them up was just barely breaking 24. And that made it a noticeable difference on point impact at long range. And it's something
right.
You need to be aware of and know what to do. Generically, for every 20 degrees that you get below the temperature you worked up, you almost need to add one more click. That's something that I found to be quite helpful, just based on my own personal experience taking and shooting in cold weather. Another thing
right.
that you can do, we all get in the habit of oiling our firearms as a rust preventive and stuff on the exterior. I found that washed off in heavy rain, like we got in coastal Alaska. And one of the things I did learn from locals up there, I don't put oil on the exterior of my guns anymore. I use a coat of Johnson's paste wax. I put it on while the gun's a little bit warm and smear it on there, let it kind of melt out, and then buff it off with a shoe brush. And it doesn't wash off when in the rain. It won't rinse off if you dunk the rifle. And it lets that moisture bead up. And it makes the surface sticky so your hand doesn't slide around on it. And I found that to be a really big aid. And folks up there in coastal Alaska have been doing that for a long time because it was the only thing that worked. And they get some pretty rough conditions on their firearms up there. And I adopted that from them and it works fantastically. So the oily rag doesn't wipe down the rifle anymore. This paste
right.
Wax now.
Well, I use I don't know the name of it now, but I use a wax that I use on some of my sculpture and stuff. It's actually a colored wax. It has like a dark color in it. I don't use it on all the firearms, but I certainly have used it on quite a few, especially the ones like I had several infields that didn't have any finish left on them anymore, And since I was going to keep them for myself as shooters, I didn't have any problem with taking them, taking all the parts over to the soft wire wheel and cleaning it down to bare metal. And once I'd done that, then I did like you were talking about. I put the wax on, a good coating of wax, and rubbed it in really good, and then buffed it off, and then I would put another coat on. And I tell you, I did that to a couple of the infields that I had, and it I'm using the darkened wax, too. It actually made a really nice finish, I thought, on it. And I've never had a speck of rust show up on them, ever. And it's been a very resilient coating. I used it on the wood stock, too. And the only difference being that the wax on the wood will get a little bit dull with sitting there after a while, but you just take a cotton rag and you a couple of seconds of buffing and it will buff right up to a high shine again. So will the metal. And
works wonderfully.
And yeah, I think it works great. Now I got a whole bunch. I've got several cases of the. I don't know why I ended up with it, but I ended up with several cases of the extremely cold temperature oil, because here in Texas we don't get extremely cold temperature. We call extreme cold like 35 degrees. but I got several cases of that, you know, 80 canes. But I use it for cleaning the firearms, and I'll use it for the oil that I'll put on like before a rifle goes into storage, because the heavy oil, I don't like that as much for storage. I like to store the rifles as dry as I can get them, but I want to have a coating of oil on to make sure that you know, that I don't get rust. And it's a much lighter oil, but I still use the old, matter of fact, the gun grease, those little grand tubs. You know, I bought
yep.
several cases of those that were packed during World War II, and the grease is still just as good now as it was then. And that's what I use on my Grand, and that's what it seems to like best. It likes a really a thick layer of grease on everything.
Folks that like the ARs and stuff definitely need to use a much lighter weight oil in the wintertime. And you know, when they're hanging around the surplus store, they need to look for some LAW, which is the military's Arctic weight oil. And that's made for 10 below, and that will pour at 75 degrees below zero. And it works in M16s and M60s to 60 or 70 below zero, and it doesn't thicken up. It'll only cut the rate of fire down by maybe 20 rounds a minute on full auto, so it doesn't get a lot of resistance when it gets cold, and they need to look at that. And the firing pin springs on their bolt guns. If you're going to go somewhere Arctic, pull them out and get that grease out of there and go to using a coat of oil on that spring. Because a lot of those old bolt guns are full of grease, and you'll take it out and hit one of them cold snaps, 20 below, and pull the trigger, and you could watch the firing pin go down.
Right. Well, and the same thing, too, with the firing pin itself. You want to make sure that you've cleaned that, that you've taken the normal grease or oil that you're using off, and you have replaced it with the cold weather, because anything that is obstructing, either in handgun, rifle, anything that anything that's grabbing onto that firing pin that is trying to move forward and strike that that cartridge's primer is going to slow it down, and it can slow it down enough that it will not produce an impact that will cause the cartridge to fire.
You know, it takes a little care, and if folks will actually go out and get in weather and go out and practice and see what their equipment does, it makes all the difference in the world. Nothing will stick like a lesson learned from personal experience. Get out there in that nasty weather once in a while and try it. The guys at the range may think you're a nut, but every little bit helps. And the only way you can actually do it is to physically go out there and shoot. Or you can go down to the zombie running gun and try it out there, because Scott's going to have some mud for you.
Yeah, like I said, the last event, we had a decent amount of rain at the end, and I actually saw, I would say three or four people at least that I actually saw stick their muzzles in the dirt, and I certainly called them on right at that time. I said, "Hey, you just stuck your muzzle in the ground. You're gonna have to make sure that it's that there are no obstructions in there, because you just stuck it in the mud." And sure enough, all three of those people had like from a half inch to a couple of inches of mud in their barrels. And
that's a tragedy.
I'm sure it happened
to
other
right
people.
There.
Yeah, I'm sure it happened to other people. And look, you know, probably 9 times out of 10, you could shoot the obstruction out. Believe me, I've seen people do it. But dang on that 10th one, whenever that bullet expands and it's got nowhere to go, and that barrel ends up like a like one of those cartoon cigars, you're going to be hurting, right? And in a self-defense situation, it may not function anymore. I mean, I've certainly seen and heard of folks in battle from current day situations in Afghanistan and Iraq, all the way back to the flintlocks in the American War for Independence. I've heard about muzzles that have, for one reason or another, and had them continue to fire. You know, even with the muzzle shredded at the end. But I certainly wouldn't count on that happening. I mean, I wouldn't count on that working. So. Make sure that that you're keeping those tip the your muzzles covered, like we talked about earlier, because it's very easy to misstep, to slip and slide in mud or rain or snow, and have that barrel go into the ground, and once it does, then you're either going to have to roll the dice on squeezing that trigger. And I'm not talking about in a training or in a practice situation. You'd never do that. I'm talking about if you were in a self-defense situation, you may have to go ahead and squeeze the trigger. You may not have any other choice. And it may work and it may not. But you don't want that to happen in the first place. So make sure that you've done something. Some tape over their barrel, some of the finger cuts, a condom, a plastic cap, something that's going to keep obstructions from getting to the barrel, do slip or fall or stick that barrel into the ground accidentally.
If you get out in the bad weather and the mud and stuff, and you're not careful and you don't cover them up, it's going to happen to you.
Yeah.
My nephew remarks all the time, about the little Ithaca double that I have, a little double 16-gauge NID. And it's got 19-inch barrels on it, and it's an outstanding grouse gun. But I finally confessed to him the other day that at one time it had beautiful 28-inch full-choke barrels on it. It was a pretty decent duck gun. Except that I got it in the mud. So now it's a grouse gun. Going to do it, so get out the tape or a finger cot or something. You will do it, and hate to see you get injured and hate to see you ruin a right nice little gun.
Right. Well, you mentioned that we're going to be having the running gun, and so let me take the opportunity to let folks know about that again. April 11th, 2015, we'll be running the Battle Road USA's End of the World as We Know It Zombie Destruction Running Gun. And this is a biathlon, so 4.5-mile looping trail, 8 shooting stations for rifle and pistol along the trail, along as well as obstacles between the stations that you'll have to negotiate. None of the obstacles are made to try and break you or anything. We're just giving you things to do so that you can see how your gear functions as you're doing these things, as you're crawling through an underground trench, or you're crawling under barbed wire, you're climbing up over a wall, any of these things that you're doing. And we're going to have a zip line over a stock tank this time. So you can see what happens when you drop your water in the stock, your rifle in the stock tank. So if you'd like to attend the event, you can go to battleroadusa.com, and you'll find the information there as well as the registration page. But we also have several other classes coming up in the let me pull up the page with the dates and stuff so I can give them to you accurately. We also have several other classes coming up. The next class we'll have is going to be March 14th and 15th. This is the beef and game processing class. And what we're going to do is we're going to go out to the field. We're going to harvest a beef and a hog. We'll take them and we'll skin them, we'll clean them, we'll quarter them, hang them in the cooler. And we may or may not have some other small game, rabbits, squirrels, and stuff like that, depending on what I can get. And then the next day, and this will be a two-day class, Saturday and Sunday. On Sunday, we'll come back and we will take it won't be the same beef because I'm actually going to harvest a beef this coming weekend. I'm going to hang it because the beef really needs to be aged in order for you to get the best flavor from it. So it'll be aged about 21 days. And then we'll take that aged beef and the hog, which doesn't need to be aged. It just needs to run overnight in the cooler to get the meat firm. And we will we'll process those and make the cuts that we want to make. I'll end up making some hamburger and some sausage. There'll be some class on the history of butchering and we'll give you some of the information on it, on why it's done certain ways and stuff like that. And then folks will give you like a pound or so of hamburger to take with you. And then also offer you the opportunity to purchase some beef or pork. And this is all organic grass-fed beef that we've raised here. That's March 14th and 15th. April 11th, we'll have the running gun. On April 25th and 26th, We're running another 2-day Ghost of Goliad Fundamentals or Rifle course. And this is a 2-day fundamentals course that that we run here, and it's an excellent course for whatever skill level that that you have, from beginner to expert. You're going to get your money's worth from the 2 days, because it's not a baby class, it's not a beginner's class, it's a fundamentals class. Fundamentals are the things that you'll need no matter what your skill level or where your shooting path is taking you. On the 9th of May, we'll have the Battle Road Fighting Shotgun class. That's a 1-day class on a Saturday. And I think it's a really great class, because almost everybody I know keeps a shotgun for home defense. But that's almost the limit of what they've done. They've gotten a shotgun, some ammunition, and that's for home defense. But very few of the folks really know the abilities or the limitations of the shotgun. They've never really spent any real amount of time running that shotgun. And we're going to teach you how to do that. We're going to teach you how to very rapidly fire the shotgun. And we want to get you to where you're firing 2 to 3 rounds per second with a shotgun. We're going to teach you how to retain control of the shotgun if you're in a situation where where somebody has grabbed hold of it, or they're trying to wrestle it from you, which could happen, and if you're moving through your house with a shotgun or something like that. We're going to teach you how to retain control of the firearm. We're going to get you to zero with slugs, and it's a great class. And as a matter of fact, I'll usually shoot through it, even though I'm helping to instruct. I'll usually end up shooting through it because I'd like to keep myself current with the shotgun. On the May 30th and 31st, we'll run another Ghost of Goliad Fundamentals 2-day course. On June 6th and 7th, we'll have a 2-day handgun course. And this is going to be, day one will be the pistol craft course, and day two will be the fighting handgun course. You can either take one or both of them. Now, in order for you to take the fighting handgun course, you'll need to either take our level one course, which is pistol craft, or to show us that you have attended some other equal course, because the level one course isn't a beginner's class either. It's not where we teach you to shoot a handgun. We expect you to arrive knowing how to operate your handgun safely and competently. And the level one course is a continuation of that. It's not a course to teach you how to use your handgun. And that'll be June 6th and 7th, and you can register for one or both. And then on June 27th and 28th, we'll run another 2-day Ghost of Goliad Fundamentals course. Now, in July, I'm working out a course with Caleb Cossey of Lone Star Medics and John Hirth of Tier Group. And this will be a 3-day full immersion course where we'll be running patrolling techniques, including night movement, night patrol, stuff like that, and combat medicine. So that's going to be a fantastic course. That'll be in July. We haven't finalized the dates on yet. Everybody's trying to make sure that we've got this clear and we've got the right dates for everybody. But I'm pretty sure it'll be in July. Just keep checking the website for that. But that's what we have coming up. In addition to that, we've got CHL classes that I don't have posted yet, and we're always willing to tailor a class to your group, to your individual, your group's needs. Okay? So if you have a group of folks and you would like a class in anything, if you want it to be handgun or a shotgun or rifle, if you want it to be tracking or land navigation or medicine, whatever you want, get in touch with us, and we will see about setting up a class for your group. Same thing with the CHL. If you've got a group of folks that that you'd like to all go through the CHL course together, we'll be glad to set up a course for you. Just contact us through the contact feature on the website, and we will we'll be glad to work with you on setting up a course. All right, I believe that's going to do it for tonight. Next week, we'll have a friend of ours on, Rick Smith, and we've got a show set up on situational awareness. This is something we usually talk about at least briefly during the CHL courses and during our handgun courses, because we want you to understand that being aware of your situation, to being aware of the situation that that is developing around you, could be your best defense in a self-defense situation. Understanding what is happening, how it normally unfolds, and the things that you can do to either stop the event from unfolding or to avoid it in the first place. Your very best defensive weapon is your mind and your ability to be aware of these situations as they are developing or the way that they could potentially develop. So we're going to devote a couple of hours to that next Thursday evening, 7 p.m. Central. All right. That'll do it for tonight. And if, like I said, if you guys have that, I do the show to bring information that I think is relevant to you. And if there's something that you want to hear, best thing to do is to contact me. You can contact me through the Battle Road USA website, through the Battle Road Radio Facebook page, or you can email me at rangescout@hughes.net, RANGESCOUT, all one word, lowercase, at Hughes, HUGHES.net. All right, thank you, Sam. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Scout,
from Wyoming. And we'll see you guys next Thursday, 7 p.m. Central. Till then, God bless and keep you all.
As a teenage boy, I found out just how free is free. Tracking who we meet, you call this liberty.